Okay, the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. Welcome, everyone. Thank you, Vicki. I'm going to open up. We're going to do this 2913, 2234, and then 2307. Can you hang out for a second, Representative Wisnett? Excellent. So I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 29. Oh, so this isn't what we carried over from the other day when I was not here. Then I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2913. I'll call it Ted Rettlinger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2913 repeals outdated and obsolete provisions and updates references to human services programs. It declares an emergency is effective on passage. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. This is one of the series of measures prepared by Legislative Counsel's Office pursuant to House Bill 4133 from the 2014 session, where they are reviewing statutes just for this purpose of drafting measures to make these kind of corrections.
Ted.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ted Reutlinger from Legislative Council, and your administrator just described what this bill is. It flows out of House Bill 4133 from the 2013 session. That bill directed Legislative Council, the Department of Justice, and the Governor's Office to search for laws that are obsolete, outdated, and duplicative, and to identify those and consider putting those into a bill for consideration by the legislature. We all went through that process, came up with four different bills, and this is one of them. This is the bill that is related to human services, and the bill required us to prepare a report that accompanies the bill. That report is on the Legislative Council website. It was also sent to all members, and it is in the OLA system accompanying this bill. And what that report does is identify for each section of this bill why we are amending or repealing the section. And those notes are also contained in the bill following each particular section of the bill. To put this together, Legislative Council worked with the Department of Justice, the Governor's Office, and the Department of Human Services to identify laws. We added some, we took some out, we circulated it to the agency and the Governor's Office. Everybody is on board, and this is the product that we came up with. And I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
It's probably best if we don't ask them.
Well, this is your chance. Okay, going. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on House Bill 2913? Come on. Going. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2913 and opening up a work session on House Bill 2913. Vice Chair Olson.
Do we not have anything? No script?
Do we have a script?
We're free. Chair Gilster, I move. Materials. Chair Gilster, I move House Bill 2913 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2913 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Is there a consent calendar in the Senate?
No.
There is not. Who would like to carry this bill?
Michael.
Thank you, Senator Dembrough. So Senator Dembrough will carry the bill. I'm going to close.
It is my pleasure, Madam Chair.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2913. That's an early birthday gift for you. And now I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2234.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2234A requires the Oregon Health Authority and health benefit plans to pay for or reimburse community assessment centers for child abuse medical assessments and related services. There is an A5 amendment that merely adds an emergency clause. There is no revenue impact on the A5 or the A version of the bill, and a fiscal statement issued as to both as well. There's no subsequent referral.
Thank you so much. Representative Wisnett. I'll listen from here. But just as a preview, will you let Senator Olson know why we're adding an emergency clause as part of your comments?
Chair. Good afternoon, Chair. Honorable committee members, for the record, Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. I'm honored to bring you today House Bill 2234. Which is with a co-sponsor of Senator Gelzer, Sarah.
I like the way he says my name.
One more time, please.
Simply HB 2234A requires the Oregon Health Authority and insurers to reimburse community assessment centers for child abuse medical assessments and related services. The center in Bend is called the Kids Center. The one in Salem is called the Liberty House. And Corvallis, it's
ABC House.
ABC House. I worked with the Schuetz County Child Abuse Intervention Center during my years on the Schuetz County Commission on Children and Families and on the State Commission on Children and Families. They provide a very special service for children who have been abused. Currently, the centers are reimbursed for insurance providers for medical services, but not for the specialized interviews and medical assessments that are required. Doug Riggs, representing the 21 Oregon Child Abuse Intervention Centers, asked for this bill during the interim and has worked with OHA and the health benefit insurers to find the right language to provide for the reimbursements. I wish we did not need these centers, but the hard facts are there's an increase in child abuse. In Oregon, 1 in 12 children are abused, and centers are not able to provide full services to all these children. The additional funds from HB 2234A will allow the centers to provide full services to more children. I urge your yes vote on House Bill 2234A. And the Madam Chair has requested an amendment -5 to add an emergency clause, which I support.
Thank you very much. Good. Any questions for Representative Wisnett?
Yeah, Representative Wisnett, why do you support an emergency clause?
Because, Madam Chair and Senator, we want to get the money out there to the centers right away.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further questions for the good representative? Thank you so much. Thanks for your work on this bill. I really appreciate it. Next, if we could pull up an extra chair so we can do everyone at once, we have Allison Kelly, Jennifer Gilmore Robinson, Barbara Pesciera?
Pesciera.
That's a C, and Doug Riggs.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll be brief. I do want to point out a resource that might be available to you.
What's
to take a
name?
Look at. And my name is Doug Riggs on behalf of the Oregon Center, Oregon Child Abuse Intervention Networks. There are 21, and I think we're going to hear some really compelling testimony about the very good work that they do in communities throughout the state. As Representative Wisnett noted, this is a bill that passed through the House. There was some negotiation that took place with some of the health benefit plans and with OHA. We think we've arrived at something that's acceptable to all people. And just to Senator Olson's question about the emergency clause, one of the things that this bill does is direct the OHA and the insurance plans to take a few months to look at a better way of billing and payments. And so we would like to get a jump start on that several-month process in evaluating how best to get these centers paid for the services that are required. I do want to point out that this is an outgrowth in part of a bill that you guys all passed back in 2007 that created Carley's Law. I think Senator Gelser gave some very impassioned testimony about Carley, who was a little girl in her district. I won't go into the details, but it really has led to an expansion and an improvement in the services to respond to reports of child abuse throughout the state. And the people here at this table are the experts and do fantastic work. But there is on the Oregon Department of Justice homepage a link to Carley's Law that you can learn a little bit more about what the state does along with the nonprofit centers throughout the state. And so it really is a collaborative effort between nonprofits and hospitals and benefit systems and plans and district attorneys and the state government to really try to come up with a collaborative way to both intervene in cases of child abuse, make sure that cases stick in the court system, and also to ensure that we get the kid and the parents and the supportive adults into the proper situation so we can prevent future abuses. So I'm really here to listen to the testimony of the experts, and I really thank you for taking the time today.
So good afternoon, Chair Gelser and committee members. It's really wonderful to be here. I urge you to support 2234, which will help stabilize services.
And can you state your name for the record,
I'm
please?
About to do that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Across Oregon for Child Abuse Victims. My name is Barbara Pesciera. I have the honor of being the Executive Director of Children's Center. We are the Child Abuse Intervention Center that serves Clackamas County. We're a nonprofit. We were formed in 2002, and we've helped more than 4,000 kids and families since then. We are also a member of the Oregon Network of Child Abuse Intervention Centers, which is the nonprofit that represents all 21, and is the organization that's bringing you this bill. House Bill 2234 will require the Oregon Health Authority and private health plans to ensure that the costs of child abuse assessments are covered and are reimbursed at a level that mirrors the complexity of the assessments. This bill is necessary to improve the funding for critically important services. Billing codes exist in Oregon for the medical exam, but not for the forensic interview. And even worse, the reimbursement rates for those medical exams are unsustainably low. They do not reflect the complexity of child abuse assessments. So the reimbursement is especially low for children who are covered by Medicaid, which is 3/4 of the children we're seeing across the state. And we are typically reimbursed to 22% of what we bill. And then for the private health plans, we're reimbursed at closer to 60%. But again, what we bill does not reflect the costs, the full costs of the assessment. So that gives you some perspective. At Children's Center, we started a couple years ago to really look into our medical reimbursements and whether we could improve them, because they were only 11% of our funding. And we found that it was very challenging. But we did have conversations with our CCOs about the long-term value of these assessments. And we were able to negotiate an alternative fee structure with Care Oregon, Family Care, and Providence, which is great because it shows that we can approach this differently, but it's still just a partial solution, and it's a real patchwork solution. It gets me more towards 40% of my costs instead of that 22%, but it doesn't create a stable system across the state for all of the centers. You'd have 21 directors negotiating with all these different providers and in a vacuum without being able to share information with each other. And so it would really end up as a Band-Aid. But House Bill 2234 is a smarter solution, and it will provide stability across this critical service. It boosts the center's ability to see every kid who needs our help. It will save lives. And if I can answer any questions, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Gilmore Robinson. I'm Executive Director of ABC House. We are the Child Abuse Intervention Center that serves Benton County and Linn County. It's my pleasure to appear today, and I thank you for that opportunity, and ask you respectfully to support House Bill 2234 as amended. The two counties that I come from, Linn and Benton, I think are two strong examples of the importance of child abuse intervention centers and why we need to continue to reach more children. Linn County is consistently among the counties with the highest child abuse victim rate in the state. We are consistently in the top 10 counties. We are commonly in the top 5. Benton County, as I'm sure many of you are aware, was the home of Carly Sheehan, who we lost when she was murdered by a child abuser. Child abuse is reaching epidemic proportions. At last count, 1 in 8 children are going to be abused or neglected by the time they turn 18. That's according to the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics, using 2011 data. And it's believed to be highly conservative due to the underreporting of child abuse and neglect. This is a frightening problem, but there are solutions, and among the most effective are child abuse intervention centers. We are considered nationally to be the best model for ensuring that children at the center of child abuse investigations are not traumatized by the system that was designed to protect them and to prevent and identify further abuse and protect it from happening further. The CAC model works because we bring all the services together that a child might need in that child abuse investigation and response. That means medical exams by doctors who are experts in child abuse medicine in recognizing the signs of abuse and treating it. It means forensic interviews by experts who are trained in how to talk to children and ask them questions in the right way about what happened to them, without interrogating them, without putting words in their mouth, so that we get the most effective, accurate information possible about what really happened to these children. Because not every child who's referred to these centers has been abused, and we need to help find the truth so that the innocent are not falsely accused and that the guilty are held accountable. These services also include family support and referral services to make sure that the family is connected, as a whole, is connected to other services that they need to heal. CICs also bring together all of the major players involved in the child abuse investigation and response, like law enforcement, DHS, Child Protective Services, mental health, the medical community, so that all of these professionals are working together collaboratively, sharing information for the most effective, efficient, and most importantly, child-friendly response possible. There are 21 centers here in Oregon, as Mr. Riggs mentioned. We are all a little different. Majority of us are nonprofit. We are all struggling to meet the increasing number of children that are referred to us each year, and we all have the same goal of delivering child abuse assessment services with funding that is dwindling. The importance of these services cannot be overstated in bringing justice and healing to these children. I'm actually going to turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Allison Kelly, to talk more about what happens when these children don't get these kinds of services.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Allison Kelly, and I serve as the Chief Executive Officer of Liberty House Child Abuse Assessment Center. We serve Marion and Polk counties here in Salem. And I endorse this request to move that -5 amendment to House Bill 2234A, and that this committee will support passing that bill and move that forward. I submitted written testimony yesterday, which I hope you have before you, and I would like to make two brief points. I'm starting at the bottom of page 2. And that is that I don't want to sugarcoat the severity of the cases that we're seeing at Liberty House. There are over 8,500 calls to the child abuse hotline in Marion and Polk counties each year. Over 1,100 of those are founded for concerns of abuse. And we think that those numbers are conservative based on the underreporting. At Liberty House, we see infants and toddlers who have suffered unthinkable beating. We see children who have been forcibly sexually assaulted, and increasing numbers of children who are forced to watch adult material conveniently available on phones and iPads and things like that, tablets, and perform adult acts on perpetrators. These children are little. They can't defend themselves. When they are forced to watch porn, they tell us they can't get the images out of their little minds. When they are forced to engage in adult acts, it sets them up to experience shame, confusion, isolation, depression, and the types of consequences that are well documented in the Adverse Childhood Experiences study. We would expect people who have experienced trauma to have emotional consequences, depression, confusion, and other emotional outcomes. What we don't expect, and what wasn't clear until that study ran its course and is still undergoing, is the fact that these early experiences that are traumatic for children, the more they have, the more likely they will also experience physical harm, such as diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and cancer. So that's all by way of saying that making these centers sustainable, which this bill will help do, is part of the answer. There's a value proposition. It's a return on investment. Being able to provide, the researchers tell us, being able to intervene and provide the right kinds of services early on will help reduce the negative effects and help children be healthier and more successful so that they can get on. So there is a value proposition among all the payers. And as Doug mentioned, we have been able to negotiate language that will improve the picture. So thank you very much for your consideration. I know we'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this panel?
I would like to know, Chair, I would like to know why, if OHA is supposed to reimburse the community assessment centers for services provided, why this didn't go to Ways and Means?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs again. There is no added additional cost. These would be for the OHA community. This would be included in the capitated rate that CCOs are already receiving. There is actually a code that already is on the approved list, and it's a matter of, touching up the definition of exactly what that code covers. So OHA did not feel it would be an additional cost. It would be within the existing amount of money that's been allocated to CCOs.
Thank you. Do you have any further questions?
Madam Chair, I also want to say Rep. Barton was not able to be here, but I really want to compliment the sponsors, Senator Gelser, Representative Wisnett, and Representative Barton for helping shepherd this along. This is very important. I think it's really going to make a difference in the lives of kids in your communities.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for the work that you do at your centers. That is, it's hard work to go every day and listen to stories when kids are courageous to be able to say them, to make them comfortable enough to feel safe to disclose to you and your staff what's happening in their lives, and hopefully we'll be able to move this along to give you more support so you can do the life-saving work that you're doing out in the community. So thank you. I know it's not without a toll when you go home every night with those stories on your hearts and in your head. So thank you all very much. Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on this bill? Seeing none, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2234 and open up a work session on House Bill 2234.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the -5 amendments dated 4/23/2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the A5 amendments dated 4/23/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to the House Bill 2234A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2234A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. It goes to the floor, and I'm going to carry this one. I will close the work session on House Bill 2234A. And I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2307A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2307A prohibits health providers from practicing conversion therapy if the recipient is under 18 and declares emergency is effective on passage. There is an A7 amendment that permits health providers to practice conversion therapy on persons under the age of 18 if it's at a place of worship. This came off the House floor at a 41-18 vote and out of House Committee 6-3. There's no subsequent referral, no revenue impact, and no fiscal impact.
Thank you. Is Representative Nose in the room somewhere, and I'm not.
He was just here.
He'll be back. So I'm just going to move ahead, and then we'll pull him up when he comes. So we'll start with Jim Hansen, Paul Southwick, and Nico Quinton. Please. Welcome.
Chair Gelser and the committee, my name is Paul Southwick, and I'm here to ask you to support House Bill 2307, the Youth Mental Health Protection Act. I have deep roots here in Oregon, having grown up in Molino in Clackamas County and went to college in Newburgh, and I now live in North Portland. I'm here today to talk with you about my experience with conversion therapy. One night, while a student at George Fox University, I woke up suddenly, feeling frightened. A tingling sensation started going up my arms, and then my hands, then my feet and legs. I couldn't breathe or speak. Felt like I was dying. After being rushed from campus to a nearby hospital, a doctor told me I experienced a panic attack. I was 20 years old. Shortly after this distressing experience, I entered conversion therapy for the first time. I entered conversion therapy because my panic attack was caused by the extreme anxiety I felt about my same-sex attractions. I needed some help, so I turned to some professionals to help me. I first experienced conversion therapy at my on-campus counseling center. My therapist was a graduate student who was supervised by a licensed professional. We spoke about my anxiety, depression, and same-sex attractions. During our sessions, though, he did not treat me for my anxiety or my depression. Rather, he tried to help me overcome my homosexual orientation and to acquire a heterosexual orientation. When I asked for his advice on how to do this, how to make the switch happen, he suggested that I watch heterosexual pornography in the hopes of arousing desire for women. His advice, though, only increased my confusion, my anxiety, and depression. My second experience with conversion therapy was through a licensed therapist in Gresham, Oregon. Someone had recommended this person as specializing in this practice. We had a few sessions, but ended our professional relationship after he told me he wasn't sure I could be cured. He should have followed up that statement by saying I did not need a cure, but he did not offer me that assurance. I left his care feeling angry and defeated. My final involvement with conversion therapy was through the Portland Fellowship, an ex-gay program in Southeast Portland I attended for 2 years. Several members of the staff, including a staff member here today, taught us about the roots of male homosexuality, focusing on things like childhood sexual abuse, which I had not experienced, and our relationships with our fathers and mothers. The goal of the program was to graduate 2 years later cured of homosexuality and be able to enter into heterosexual relationships like the leaders had done. I did not attend my graduation of this program because the anxiety and depression I experienced during my panic attacks had only worsened and intensified during this program, and my sexual attractions to men had not diminished. It took 2 years. Two years after my last experience for me to come out as a gay man. It took several more to lose the shame associated with my sexual orientation. When you are in conversion therapy, you are taught that you have a sickness, that you have a pathology, that something is wrong with you, and that you need a cure. When that cure never comes, you are left more hopeless and helpless than when you first started. Not once in all of those forms of therapy did anyone ever tell me that I was okay, that my desires were normal, common, and a healthy part of my life. It takes some time to heal and forgive after these kinds of experiences. I'm now in a place where I've forgiven the trusted professionals who harmed me. But I've not forgotten the pain of those experiences, and I do not want any other young LGBTQ folks to spend any amount of time needlessly feeling like they have a sickness without a cure. I urge the committee to vote in support of HB 2307 to protect future generations. Thank you for allowing me to share my story.
Thank you. And we're going to take whole panels and then do questions at the end, if that's okay with everybody. Thank you. Yes.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is Jim Hansen, and I'm representing the Oregon School Psychologists Association. First, I wanted to thank Senator Gelser for her help also with Senate Bill 612 for our students with dyslexia, and also your inspiring words at the Oregon Youth Suicide Prevention Initiative steering five-year plan steering committee. Thank you. The Oregon School Psychologists Association, which represents the profession of school psychology and the hundreds of school psychologists who work with children, youth, and families in Oregon, supports House Bill 2307. We encourage prohibiting mental health professionals from engaging in sexual orientation change efforts with clients under the age of 18 years. Among numerous documents, the National Association of School Psychologists' Safe Schools for Transgender and Gender Diverse Students position statement acknowledges that neither having a transgender identity nor being perceived as gender diverse is a disorder, and that efforts to change a person's gender identity are ineffective, harmful, and discriminatory. Efforts to change sexual orientation have been shown to cause harm and do not adhere to the National Association of School Psychologists' policies regarding supporting youth in developing their identity. The American Psychological Association and NASP's 2014 Joint Resolution on Lesbian, Gay, and Bisexual Youth in Schools specifically states that the practice of psychology promotes the individual's development of personal identity, including the sexual orientation of all individuals. In sum, mental health professionals should affirm that same-sex sexual and romantic attractions, feelings, and behaviors are normal and positive variations of human sexuality and diverse gender expression. Research upon the effects of reparative therapy on youth indicate that at best, such therapies are ineffective, and at worst, such therapies may and do result in increased suicide rates, depression, and anxiety for LGBT youth. Harm caused by mental health professionals as a result of ignorance, prejudice, or intolerance are absolutely unacceptable and must be avoided by all means. Not only is it fundamentally important that every person who uses health services be treated with dignity and respect, it's also critical to prevent the application of theories and models that view homosexuality as a deviation or choice that can be modified through willpower or supposed therapeutic support. Thank you.
Chair Gessler and members of the committee, my name is Nico Quintana, and I'm the policy director at Basic Rights Oregon. I want to thank you for having us here today. I want to extend my deep support for House Bill 2307, the Youth Mental Health Protection Act. I support HB 2307 because it will have a life-saving impact on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth in Oregon. This bill will protect LGBTQ youth from harmful practices, as my colleagues have talked to about today, of conversion therapy, which aims to change sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression of LGBTQ youth. This harmful practice of conversion therapy is discredited and uses the practice of shame and rejection and is seen as psychological abuse to force young people to try and change who they are. These practices are known to be extremely dangerous and can lead to depression, decreased self-esteem, substance abuse, and even suicide. Despite the progress we've made, devastating rates of violence and discrimination still exist in Oregon, particularly for transgender youth and LGBTQ youth of color, leading to high rates of health disparities and early mortality and morbidity rates. 83% of transgender Oregonians experience harassment and discrimination on the job. 23% have experienced homelessness. 40% have reported a history of suicide attempts. According to LGBTQ, additionally, LGBTQ people of color experience higher rates of poverty, harassment, discrimination, and negative life outcomes. This is a personal for me. In 2014 alone, I lost 4 friends that are transgender identified. 1 I lost to suicide, 1 I lost to murder, and 2 I lost to health disparities, the youngest of which was 22 years of age. We only need to look to national headlines to be reminded how conversion therapy is claiming the lives of our community members and our young people. On December 28, 2014, Leila Alcorn, a 17-year-old transgender girl from Ohio, took her own life after being subjected to conversion therapy. In her note to her friend, she spoke to her hope that one day transgender people aren't treated the way that she was. She said that they treated she didn't treat her like a human being. It grieves me that youth like Leila are still being treated and subjected to the discredited and harmful practices of conversion therapy. Oregon is a leader on LGBTQ issues, and we ask you, our state leaders, to once again demonstrate that leadership and work to ensure that all lives of LGBTQ youth and to support LGBTQ youth in the lives of our community and our young people. So please support HB 2307 and please ban conversion therapy by licensed providers on minors. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming and sharing your stories. Are there questions for this panel? Seeing them. Thank you all very much. Representative Nose, and while Representative Nose is coming up, I'm looking around the room and I see several people videotaping, which is great, but just so you know, it's also being videotaped and you'll be able to pull it down from the internet. And see committee staff afterward and we can make sure you get the link so you can have a good quality video and audio.
Okay.
Representative Nose.
Go ahead, get started. So, Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Rob Nose, and I'm currently the state representative for House District 42, which represents Southeast and Northeast Portland. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you this afternoon. House Bill 2307 is a bill with, I think, a very simple message to Oregon's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered youth, and that message is this: there's nothing wrong with you. The bill is aimed at protecting minors who are or think they might be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender from being subjected to conversion therapy, a therapy which includes a range of dangerous and discredited practices aiming at changing a person's sexual orientation or their gender identity. House Bill 2307 provides protection from this so-called therapy by prohibiting licensed and state-regulated mental health and social health professionals from engaging in conversion therapy with minors in an effort to change that minor's sexual orientation or gender identity. The bill does not prohibit counseling to a minor who is considering or undergoing a transition of his or her gender. The bill does not prohibit licensed and regulated mental health care and social health professionals from engaging in counseling that is supportive, accepting, and understanding regarding sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, surely some of you remember that adolescence can be a rough and awkward time. For many young people, it's a time that's filled with insecurity, angst, and confusion. And it can become even harder when you become aware that you're in a minority and your sexuality is different from that of most of the culture. And when even now, in the year 2015, the culture often sends a not too subtle message that maybe it's not okay to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. This bill helps ensure those young Oregonians, and it does this because it ensures those young people who find themselves in such circumstances, you know, trying to figure out who they are, trying to figure out their sexuality, that they will not also find themselves in front of a licensed professional who's going to tell them that something inside them is broken and that they can be turned into a heterosexual when the truth is they cannot. You know, I didn't figure out that I was gay until I was 23 years old. And upon that initial recognition, given the, I think, the negative messages our culture sends about homosexuality, especially back in 1991, I did think that there was something that was wrong with me. Candidly, knowing what many of my friends and my family thought about homosexuality back in 1991, I was pretty depressed about the prospect of being gay. But I have to say that upon coming out, as difficult as I found it to deal with initially, I had a few advantages. First of all, I was 23 years old, and I was an adult. I was living on my own. I don't know what I would have done or how well I would have handled it if I had come to that realization at a younger age, or how my parents would have handled it back in the 1980s when I was growing up in rural Ohio, attending Catholic middle school and high school. But for sure, I'm lucky that as a kid, I was never subjected to this type of therapy and told that there was something wrong with me that needed fixing. It wouldn't have worked. And if I'd had to endure conversion therapy along with adolescence, I don't know. I might not be here before you today in this capacity. I'll just close by saying that House Bill 2307 is a good bill. It passed out of our chamber with 41 members voting yes. You know, and we hope that by the Senate passing the bill and the governor hopefully signing it, you'll send a message again to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered youth that there is indeed nothing wrong with you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Any questions for the good representative? Senator Denbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you very much for bringing this bill to us. I have a question as to why this is focused only on youth, people under the age of 18.
I think we felt that, you know, it's pretty hard to write a law that regulates what a consenting adult can do. But, you know, children are still at a very vulnerable place in their life, and we felt that it was important that they be protected from a therapy that's been discredited. And I don't know if people that were up here previous to me talked about the myriad of professional organizations that believe that this therapy is, you know, basically quackery. But if they haven't gotten up here, I'm sure someone will list off. There's a myriad of professional and counseling type organizations that will tell you that it doesn't work. So I think that's why we're focused on youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I could just follow up. I mean, I think, and I appreciate that, but I think that one of the key issues that we're looking at here is what requirements we put on individuals whom the state licenses to be professionals in these areas. And, you know, I would argue that if the consensus among the professional organizations and, you know, I think scientific research is that this is not, you know, correct and really cuts against the core principles of what we expect from licensed therapists, you know, I wonder if we should be allowing it for therapists treating any age patient. But I, having said that, I firmly respect this what you're doing.
I mean, I think it's an interesting policy discussion. I think just that we felt like, you know, it's harder, frankly, to talk about what consenting adults get to do, frankly, or not do.
Thank you so much,
Thanks
Representative Nose.
And
so
the bill.
So committee staff has asked me to remind you as you come up, if you get too close to the microphone, we get bad feedback and it makes it hard for people to hear. So just remember that microphones are really sensitive. And I also wanted to make a brief announcement about the order of the hearing. So both the proponents and the opponents, I'm going to pull up two panels each first. So we'll do one more panel of supporters, then we'll do two panels of opponents. And then after those first four panels, two and two, we're going to go to some time limits so we can get through everybody. So the next panel is Samantha Ames, who's on the phone, Jason Zenobia, and Arthur Saffer. Stafford? All right.
Rhymes with Laffer.
Rhymes with Laffer, got it. The problem is I've translated into my own sheet, so I can't read my own handwriting. Do we have you on the phone, Ms. Ames?
Yes, you do.
Great. Why don't you go ahead and start and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you so much for this opportunity to submit testimony in support of House Bill 2307. My name is Samantha Ames, and I am a staff attorney at the National Center for Lesbian Rights and the coordinator of our Born Perfect campaign to end conversion therapy. NCLR is a national nonprofit legal organization dedicated to protecting and advancing the civil rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people and their families. Our youth project was founded in 1993 specifically to address the mistreatment of LGBT youth in the mental health system. I've seen, as part of my job, firsthand the devastating impact on parents and families when they are misled by state-licensed professionals who give them false information that therapy can change their child's sexual orientation or gender identity. And tragically, not all those children survive. In 2009, the American Psychological Association reviewed all the data on conversion therapy and concluded that there is no scientific evidence that such efforts are effective and significant evidence that they are harmful, especially for children, being linked to dramatically increased rates of depression, substance abuse, risky sexual behavior, isolation, and, as we know all too well, suicide. Because these practices have no scientific basis, provide no benefits, and carry such high risks, every single one of the nation's leading medical and mental health associations have issued policy statements condemning them. 2 months ago, a New Jersey court concluded that, quote, any expert opinion based on the initial premise that homosexuality is a mental disorder or abnormal is unreliable and barred. And that court went on to rule that professional claims that being LGBT is a curable mental disorder constitute consumer fraud. Even the United Nations Committee Against Torture has pressured the United States to address the recent resurgence in conversion therapy. And just weeks ago, the Surgeon General, Vice President, and President of the United States all publicly condemned conversion therapy and came out in strong support of state bills exactly like House Bill 2307. The attorneys at NCLR have helped defend laws exactly like this before two federal circuit courts, including the Ninth Circuit, both of which have concluded that these regulations are entirely constitutional. The courts recognize that bills like this don't affect the ability of minors to seek any type of medically sound therapeutic treatment. Like every other law that regulates licensed professionals, this bill will only ensure that state-licensed mental health providers cannot subject minor patients to dangerous, ineffective, and discredited practices, and cannot defraud loving parents who would never knowingly place their children at risk of such serious harms, and who count on the law to ensure that state-licensed professionals keep their kids safe. Working closely with survivors of conversion therapy, I know all too well that this bill before you today is a matter of life and death. Medical professionals bearing Oregon State's seal of approval are using the trust their license engenders to teach children that who they are is wrong, that their identity can be blamed on everything from repressed sexual abuse to close family relationships, and even that they can be trained out of their core identity with painful aversive conditioning by snapping a rubber band around their wrist, subjecting themselves to extreme temperatures, and even electric shocks. The recent suicide of Leela Alcorn, a transgender teenage girl who said that being forced into conversion therapy made her feel more isolated and rejected, has been a wake-up call to much of the country that we need to act now to protect our children from an industry that frankly profits off of their pain. HB 2307 honors those we've lost by protecting the most vulnerable among us from being told that who they are is wrong. And it protects families from the agony of discovering too late that they have been defrauded by a trusted professional. I therefore strongly urge you to support HB 2307 and send a message to all children that they are safe to be who they are in the state they call home. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Next.
Chair Gelser and the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Jason Zenobia, and my father, Arthur Saffer, and I are here to tell you our story and why we strongly support House Bill 2307, the Youth Mental Health Protection Act. When I was 16 years old living in Lake Oswego, my parents sent me into conversion therapy. I was gay, and I couldn't imagine any future for myself. For all I knew, my options were prison, or life in a mental hospital, or death by violence or AIDS. I was suicidal. My parents were worried for my safety, and they wanted to find help. The professional therapist they turned to claimed that he could cure gay people and make them straight as long as they were properly motivated. This was the only hope I could imagine, to make it go away. But you can't fix something that's not broken. I turned even deeper inward, into my own shame and fear. I turned away from my parents, my friends, my brother, everyone who mattered to me. This therapist encouraged me to lie to myself and everyone else, so I did. After a year or so, I just wanted it to stop. I planned my suicide, but I didn't go through with it. So I told the therapist I was cured, and he accepted that. Before we parted ways, he brought my parents into one last therapy session where he scolded me for all the pain I had caused my mother and father and instructed me to apologize to them for what I had put them through. It took me years to unravel the damage that this treatment inflicted on my family. The scars are still there. Sometimes I feel angry about it, but something my father told me years later helped. He said, "You always want your children's lives to be easy. We thought we were helping you. We just didn't realize how much damage we were doing. If we had it to do over again, we never would have done that to you." Too often we read in the news about families who never get that second chance. That is why I urge this committee to vote in support of House Bill 2307 so we protect future generations of families from enduring this kind of pain and worse. Thank you.
Dear Chair Gelser and members of the committee, I am Arthur Saffer. I am Jason's father. And I will want to tell you about the story because it caused a tremendous pain to me and my family, and I don't want this to happen to anyone else. And I want you to help protect my fellow citizens from this kind of trauma. In about 1987, when Jason was in high school, he came out to us as being gay. And my knowledge and awareness of gay at that time was about zero. I mean, the only thing I knew about it derived from off-color jokes. So, but now suddenly it was very real to me. And I knew that I was very ignorant. And being a scientist, the way that I attacked this was to learn more about it. And so I looked in the literature and did computer searches of the medical literature and so on. And at that time, this issue was not very well settled or understood in the literature either. The consensus of opinion that I found, or at least substantial opinion that I found, was this condition is correctable. However, I'm not stupid. I knew that this was not based on scientific evidence, but rather on clinical impression. But that is the best information available. So we acted on it. And we took our son to a service, the Lutheran Family Services of Portland provided the psychiatric care and others, and we went there and we took him, and they I explained, hey, he's normal, he's gay, and you just better learn to live happily with that conclusion. But I was worried. Well, I was concerned because I thought that gay people just couldn't be happy in this world. So we took him to somebody else. And to find somebody else, I again looked in the literature. I found that there was a psychiatrist who the state of Oregon employs to talk to sex offenders and in his clinic and correct their misfortunes. And I called him, spoke to him, and he recommended somebody who he thought was very good at this kind of conversion therapy. And so we took him there, and the results were disastrous. This man said that Jason was not really gay, and he was cured and all of this, and we believed him. And the problem here is that when you want a certain result, you become very credulous about people who are in authority and tell you they know what they're doing and they can help you and they can fix this problem. When Jason was a freshman at University of Puget Sound, he came out to us again, told us he was gay, and at that point I realized, oh, he must be gay. How about that? So it's now time to see to it that becomes a happy gay person and a happy adult, and that is what happened. But let's look at what happened to me, because there are others here telling you as survivors, victims of this thing, which is really a form of child abuse perpetrated by people who are really very well-meaning, who think they're helping children. And what happened is, look, I harmed my son. I hurt him. And this is the last thing a parent wants to discover that he's done, and the last thing that you want in the world. So the trauma to me is tremendous. I mean, I hurt my kid. That's what can a parent say that's worse than that? So I ask you, please protect every family in Oregon and pass this legislation to prevent this kind of child abuse from all these well-meaning people. So thank you very much for listening to me and giving me the opportunity to tell you about it.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel?
Yes. Thank you for coming. I actually have a question for the attorney.
Yes, she is. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Great.
Hi, this is Lori Monis-Anderson. I was wondering, have any states really looked at this being child abuse? Has anyone been prosecuted, or are we still in the beginning phases of that?
We are still in the beginning phases. That's a great question, and thank you so much for asking it. Child abuse does involve criminal law, and we would really rather not go there. The most reasonable way to approach this really is through state licenses. States have really broad authority to regulate what professionals do with state licenses, which really is part of the problem here. It is the fact that we are giving a state seal of approval to a licensed professional, which engenders a lot of trust in the public. Furthermore, the boards that enforce those those licenses and these kinds of regulations are made up of the professionals themselves, who really are in the best position to know what is best for their profession. In drafting these laws, we've worked really, really closely with mental health community, with mental health organizations and providers, to make sure that it really is coming from the community of professionals asking to be regulated. So it really does make the most sense to leave it within the hands of those professionals.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Yes.
For the attorney. My name is Senator Alan Olson. I have a question for you. The original bill that we excluded said prohibits mental health care professionals and social health professionals from providing any service to person under 18 years of age for purpose of attempting to change person's sexual orientation or gender identity. That was already currently the law. Why do we need this change?
I'm sorry, I'm unclear on what you're asking. Are you saying that there was already a law that was restricting conversion therapy on minors?
Yes.
Well, in that case, I apologize. I am a constitutional lawyer and not an expert in Oregon law, and I did not know about that. So I would encourage you to ask the local advocates that question.
Okay, thank you.
And one other question.
Yes, follow up.
And maybe I should wait for other advocates to come. I think I'll do that to ask my next question. Yeah.
Thank you. And Senator Olson, could you just clarify where are you saying
that? That's just in the summary.
That's in the, so when the bill was originally printed, this is the amended, this is the A engrossed. So right here, that was in the original bill. That wasn't the original law. So they were refixing the description.
So a fix of a fix.
It was a fix of a fix. So there was no existing law. Does that answer the question?
It does.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Samantha, we are going to hang up the phone, but you can continue to listen online. Is that all right?
It's perfect. Thank you so much for having me today.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
I don't know how to hang up the phone. All right. Next, we have William Brookhart, Jason Graves, and Teresa Hark. And is William Brookhart here too?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. So come on up.
Oh.
Did you intend to sign up to talk?
I thought I heard nothing. I'm not with these people.
You're not with the... Are you supporting or opposing the bill?
Pardon me?
Are you in support of the bill or in opposition
to
the bill?
I'm in opposition, and I did not come with these folks.
Okay, that's okay. It's okay. We just have panels, and so why don't we let these folks go first, and then you'll go third?
Okay.
Or do you want to go the other way around?
I'll defer to my elder.
Why don't you go ahead and go first, and then we'll... Sorry about that, sir.
Well, my name's William Brookhart. I'm from Clackamas County. I'm here to in opposition to HB 2307. Concerning this bill, there are quite a few elephants in the room that haven't been discussed. The first elephant would be the fact that the natural mature preservation of the species' sexual behavior is a reproductive heterosexual in nature. I think we ought to keep that in mind for our children. Elephant number two is the issue that this bill will affect, and that is individual and parental rights. The state of Oregon should not deny individual or parental rights to seek professional licensed counsel concerning this matter for their minor children. The state has no justifiable reason to interfere or refute parent instruction on this regard, and no parent in Oregon should have to leave the state to seek help for their child of this nature. Your duty is to protect freedom for the people of our state, not to cater to special interest behavior groups. Elephant number three is a regards the rights of valid professional service providers. If professional licensed counselors have sufficient research, case study, experience, and are responsible and professionally can justify the beneficial restoration therapy, that then they should not be prohibited from providing it when requested by an individual or the parent. Elephant number four is rights concerning religion and practice. State of Oregon should not prohibit the free exercise of religion. It is well known by everybody here what the Christian Holy Bible teaches concerning ordained sexual behavior. Pastors and church employees, some of whom are professionally licensed individuals, are frequently asked to counsel children or minors on this very topic. If long-term counseling becomes necessary, pastors frequently will refer such persons to an independent professional licensed counselor. There should be no law exists that deny the individual who is willingly pursuing or professional licensed counselors to appropriately provide such counsel when requested by the individual or the parent. Your duty and assignment is to protect freedom for the people of Oregon, not to cater to special interest groups. So in conclusion, I'd like to say that our children are inundated daily, just about anyway, and targeted, and frequently are influenced to engage or to embrace unnatural sexual behaviors that are exactly contrary to the very thing that we as parents tell them not to do or tell them to do. And what the HB 2307 is doing is attempting to, after our children have been recruited into this behavior, that the parents do not have a right to seek help for them on the basis that the parent wishes to help them. So your duty and assignment is for the freedom of the people to make that choice, not to cater to special interest behavior groups. HB 2307, in addition, declares itself to be emergency legislation, revealing itself to be even more so a highly crafted effort to usurp rights of Oregonians. And we all know how that works. As responsible representatives of the people, you should first amend HB 2307 to correct the deficiencies that I've discussed, including the necessary exemptions and changes to protect individual rights, parental rights, professional rights, and religious rights as necessary. HB 2307, with all these amendments, should really be rejected and voted down as a violation and an affront to the freedom of Oregon citizens to protect themselves and their family.
Thank you very much.
The people should have the right to do or not to do what they determine is best for their children on this matter. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I thought you were at your summary sentence. I did not mean to cut you off from your last one.
I didn't quite understand you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, Teresa.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Teresa Harkey. I'm the lobbyist for Oregon Family Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. So Oregon Family Council is an organization committed to protecting religious freedoms, and we understand the concerns that led to the creation of this bill, but we believe that the language as written is too broad and may have unintended consequences for religious liberties. We're here to testify and express our concern about 2307 and to urge you to adopt the Dash 7 amendments that we're proposing to ensure religious protections. The amendments would protect church counseling programs and would prevent what we see as bad precedent that could be set where the state would now have a loophole to regulate church ministries and church counseling programs. We're not aware of any Oregon churches that practice conversion therapy, specifically what the professional industry understands to be conversion therapy, not necessarily as how it's defined in this bill, but we're not aware of any churches that practice conversion therapy as part of their counseling programs and ministries. But the language of the bill sets an undue burden on churches that may have licensed professionals working and volunteering within their church. So if you have a church pastor or another pastoral staff or volunteer who holds a license or a degree, we're concerned that this bill would allow the state to now regulate church programs where those professionals are involved. We have a long history of protecting the First Amendment rights of religious institutions and protecting churches from state interference, both in our nation and in Oregon, and we strongly urge you to adopt the proposed Dash 7 amendments that would protect church counseling programs and retain the sanctity of churches. The amendments adopted in the House helped outline the types of treatment, as I said, that this bill is meant to prevent that are discredited, but we believe the definition still needs a clear religious exemption for the legislative intent of the bill and also to protect the free speech of churches that may employ or have licensed professionals volunteering with them.
Thank you very much. And the Dash 7 amendments are posted in OLIS now. Yes?
Thank you.
Great.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate your time and being here today. This is Jason Graves. I'm with Healing for the Soul, which is a counseling organization, and I'm part of a group known as it's a therapy advocacy group known as Equality and Justice for All. I wanted to share a little bit about my story as well of a person that came from abuse, starting at about the age of 5 years old, continuing up through my early teen years. I experienced some sexual abuse at the hands of a female babysitter and a male scout leader, as well as a female family member. And for me, this caused so much shame that it was hard for me to even talk about that. It caused me to feel bad about just myself. At the end of the day, I really wanted something for my life that, because of what happened to me, I thought I couldn't have. And that was simply a wife and children of my own. So when I finally got the opportunity to speak to somebody about these unwanted same-sex attractions, it was a very freeing thing for me. It was never anything about shame. I was never told that I was a sinner. I didn't grow up in a religious family. It was something that I was not forced to do. I wasn't even offered. It was something I just sought out on my own. And I'm just thankful that I had a chance to work on those issues, because even though I felt what I perceived to be attraction towards other males, that's just not how I wanted to live. I don't look down on people who want to live that way. It's a free country, and some people choose to live homosexually, but we can't force people to live homosexually if they don't want to. So for me, being able to be married for 12 years now to Susan, and our little girls, Sailor Ray and Isabella, are 8 and 5. That wouldn't have been possible for me if I didn't have this help. That wouldn't have been possible if there wasn't somebody that would help me deal with my unwanted same-sex attractions and work through those the way I determined, even as a teenager, that I wanted to do that. And so I'm very grateful. I was never shamed. I was never tortured. I was never thought of as somebody that needed to be converted to anything. I was never told I was a sinner. I was never told that I needed to be cured. It was nothing like that. Absolutely not. Helping people today and I trained really hard to get a master's degree in marriage and family therapy from Seattle Pacific University in order to be able to help with people with these same kinds of concerns. And in my training, we were rigorously instructed about ethics. One of the ethics involved in counseling is that you only treat people that want to be treated. I know almost everyone in this country that deals with this issue of unwanted same-sex attractions, either personally or professionally, some of whom are in this room. I have never heard of somebody using shame, coercion, electroshock, anything of a harmful nature whatsoever. And if I did, I would be required to report them, and I would. I would like to know the names of the people, of the therapists that have been mentioned today, because I believe it's important that we hold these people accountable. I apologize deeply on behalf of my profession for those who have experienced any kind of shame or harm, like has been mentioned in this room today. And I want to make it clear that professionals like myself and my colleagues do not consider that therapy. What they described is not therapy. It's ignorance. And we have laws in place already that protect children from this kind of ignorance. We need to enforce those laws. We need to go after therapists who are doing things irresponsibly and carelessly and recklessly that are causing harm to children. We need to protect those kids. There's no reason why a kid needs to be forced into therapy. No child is ever allowed to see me for therapy without consenting to it and reading a document that spells out very directly that we are not trying to force anything on you. We are not trying to even change your orientation. That's something that you have to decide for yourself if that's what you want. We also need to protect kids who want to make the choice to live differently than what their feelings might be telling them at the time. Kids kill themselves because they lose the hope of being able to live in accordance with their values. Children do harm themselves because they're told, you don't have a choice. And we need to protect those kind of kids like me just as much. Protection is something that we need to make sure goes both ways. And I don't want to put any kids in harm's way, but I know that if we effectively force kids to live homosexually if they don't want to, that puts them in harm's way. So I respectfully ask that you would consider voting no on this bill, and I'm willing to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any brief questions for this panel?
I do have
Senator
a question.
Senator Anderson.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Graves, thank you for coming. We have had testimony, and I've received a lot of testimony, on people who have gone through conversion therapy, and they have been harmed. And I haven't heard of any, except for you, who've gone through conversion therapy, that have, maybe testimony will come, that have found it a benefit to them in their values. If there are so many more people who have been harmed, don't you think that says something about the profession?
Great question, Senator Monis Anderson. Thank you. Again, for the record, Jason Graves. When you are in a faith-based community and you have values that say that it's not, there is a way that God wants you to live with your life, if that's what you believe, it's very difficult to talk about this struggle. So I know that there are a lot of people like me, a person of faith today, that have experienced this great change, and you will hear from some others here today later, that have had a great experience, but it's very difficult to talk about. We're not celebrated in this culture. We don't have TV shows about us going, hey, look at how great it is to be an ex-gay. We're not celebrated. So I don't expect that anybody under those conditions would want to speak up. It's very uncomfortable as it is. And I will tell you that in the 11 years that I've been practicing professionally, of the nearly 1,500 cases I've treated, mostly adults, there's been 200 that have been adolescents. And so I can't talk about those people publicly because obviously that would be a breach of confidentiality. But if those people, I had a relationship with those people today, which is not really, it's prohibited as a therapist, I would be glad to invite them to come and share their stories. We can look no further than the study in 2008 that was put out by Stanton Jones that said that religious-based or faith-based approaches to helping people with unwanted same-sex attractions can be effective as often as 60% of the time, depending on the people's goals. So we talk about studies and researches, but please note for the record, no studies besides that one has actually been quoted today. I'd like to know, for example, with all due respect, Senator Dembrough, what research you were referring to, what study exactly that you mentioned that you used for the basis of the idea that this these kinds of therapies would be banned even for adults. Maybe I could get that for you later, or maybe you'd care to state that now, perhaps. But when it comes to research outcome-based studies done on harm and same-sex attraction and therapies related to orientation, there are zero. If there were, they would be quoted here today. There are no studies that show that there is harm. We can say that something's been discredited, but based on what? I can say a lot of things have been discredited sitting here, but that doesn't make it true. The statements against sexual orientation-related therapies by the APA, the AMA, and the other APA also come with statements that my colleague David Pickup will quote later that say that there's no evidence, according to the American Psychological Association, that sexual orientation-related therapies are harmful. They don't have any studies either. And those are based on opinion, not studies. So, again, I just come back to protection and trusting in the ethical guidelines that are already there. The attorney on the phone said we need to trust in the regulatory bodies and the professional trade associations that already exist and the ethical guidelines therein to regulate this profession. And I agree.
Thank you. And I think we're going to move. Do you want to add?
No, that's fine.
Are you sure?
Well, let me just ask one quick question.
Sure.
So, Mr. Graves, are what is the organization that licenses you?
So I live in the state of Colorado, so it would be the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies. And so by extension, I'm affected by other states because we help people all over the country and all over the world.
Okay, but what is the actual professional organization that you belong to, that your license is under?
So that would be the state of Colorado.
Okay, but there's not, you know, whatever the...
like a trade association?
Like a trade association, yeah.
The trade association.
Family and family counselors. There are national organizations that certify people, right?
Yeah. Technically, you can't be licensed by one of those trade organizations, as you probably know. But I think what you're saying is, what organization do I belong to? And so I've been a part of the American Association for Christian Counselors for many years, and I'm a past member of the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
All right. And our next panel is Ann Pock, Robin Goodspeed, David Pickup. And then just to give people a sense of where we have one, two, four more panels after this panel, and I will stay as long as it takes to get through all of the testimony, and committee members are invited to stay as well.
Where's the pizza?
Did you say beer?
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it in Clackamas County. Welcome.
Thank you.
And if you can just start by stating your name for the record, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for allowing us to testify, Senator Gelser, Chair Gelser, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure being with you today. My name is Ann Polk. There are multiple levels of issues that I have with this bill. The majority of it is the fact that it's prohibiting one particular goal of counseling in one direction only, a change of orientation related to same-sex attraction, as opposed to a child who's been sexually molested into embracing homosexuality, which would be a violation of ethics as well, in my opinion. So one of the issues that I have was one that Jason Graves brought up just a moment ago about scientific harm that's been proven. I think you made that point pretty well. Have there been any youth studies about harm psychologically? No scientific studies whatsoever. And so I'd love to know the names of any of those studies. On the other hand, as far as youth and alcohol, there have been 10,000 studies practically proving a case between alcohol use and harm for children. So that would be really important to hear. The CDC, on the other hand, shows that there is a 91% case of new HIV/AIDS within youth of between the ages of 13 and 18 who have sex with men, men who have sex with men, and that's the causation of the AIDS and HIV cases from the government data. So that's pretty important. As far as harm goes, physical harm can definitely play in there. So that's very important to me. I am deeply concerned about the content of the bill particularly, which clearly does not seek to eliminate or criminalize a particular method of therapy, but a counseling goal for minors and their families. If banning a therapy technique were the goal of this bill, like electroshock or waterboarding or anything, cold ice and rubber bands, I mean, all of that would make sense to me. But not a therapeutic goal, an outcome of talk therapy. That's a bit over the top in my mind. So as to methods or technique, one such as aversion therapy, again, this bill does not seek to even mention it or prohibit it. Aversion therapy is used currently in alcohol treatment for using chemicals that a person ingests. So if they ingest a drug or alcohol, they will associate a negative feeling with doing the addictive behavior. So it's currently in use in certain alcohol and drug treatment programs. It is not in use in people overcoming homosexuality or seeking to do so. And if it were, I would love to know where, and perhaps this bill could be written in order to produce no aversion therapy for people who are seeking to leave homosexuality. I mean, honestly, that would be a great goal for a bill, and I would support that. So again, instead of banning a method, this bill seeks to remove a minor and their family's counseling goal related to unwanted homosexual feelings, thought, or identity. And specifically from the bill itself, it says conversion therapy means providing professional services for the purpose of attempting to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity, including to change behaviors or expressions of self, and to reduce sexual or romantic attractions and feelings towards individuals of the same gender. Another point there, again, this is about attempting to change feelings, not a modality of how it's accomplished or even sought if the child wants this help. So another issue here is what indeed on the religious freedom aspect, what if a counseling Catholic, Baptist, Lutheran, or whatever, seeks to counsel a youth not to act homosexually? In other words, we won't say anything about orientation or feelings, but as far as behavior, we'll help you to manage those things in order to avoid the behavior. Well, guess what? It's in the law. You can't help that if this becomes law, and that's a problem. So attempting to change behaviors or expressions of self, these are very broad terms and very, I think, overbroad terms. How would this church impact parachurch, pastoral, lay, or non-licensed counselors, pastoral care, who actually want to overcome homosexual feelings? or same attractions towards people of their same gender. How would it impact professional licensed counselors within church settings? Those all come into play, and those I don't believe those questions are answered at this point as far as protections go. So let's say there's a child abused here in the state with somebody who is a sexual predator who took advantage of someone under 18 of the same gender. We know several, one who's frequently at the Capitol, Terry Bean, who gave up the photographs and video of himself doing this sort of thing to the Portland police. I mean, I'm an Oregon resident, so I'm going to bring it up because it's here in my state. Can those children, if more than one, if perchance, have the ability to work through feelings that if they have unresolved related to one of those topics, are they unable to do that in a way that resolves and removes them from residual feelings of same-sex attraction that they then connect with an abusive situation or one taken advantage? What do we do with kids who've been sexually molested? The previous bill that was heard in this room was all about protecting children, and what you're doing here in this case is actually enabling almost predators of the same gender to kind of get away with what they're doing. And I don't want to be accusatory. It's just very dramatic to me because I was molested as a teen, as a young girl. And the impact of that was so dramatic on my life. It made a difference in where I went in my future. I ended up dealing with same-sex attraction later on. I first wanted to embrace it, and I had no trouble whatsoever doing so. And I'm in my 50s, so it's a while back, those years. I had a partner, and she wanted to leave homosexual feelings behind. And her counselors, even within the church, said, no, sorry, you can't do that. She became distraught about that. She became suicidal as a result of saying, no, we will not help you with the goal that you want to accomplish. That was her experience. And, this is pretty important for me. Should there be abusive counseling, therapeutic modalities or methods? Of course not. But as far as a goal, I think we're becoming abusive and closing down one option that teens should have open to them. So this is really personal. And according to the APA, the goal of reducing or eliminating same-sex attraction has not been conclusively proved to be harmful. Their website currently, right now, as of last night, states they have officially expressed concerns about therapies promoting to modify sexual orientation. But to date, there have been no scientifically adequate research to show, in their opinion, that it has aimed at changing sexual orientation is safe or effective. Yet expressing concerns and saying there is no scientifically adequate research to show effectiveness should not be adequate to ban care. Consider the 2011 longitudinal research published in the Journal of Sex and Marital Therapy that concluded an effective change rate of over 30% in persons seeking care, and it did not show harm via religiously mediated efforts. Yet the 2002 Consumers Report by...
Ms. Pack, is this all in the written testimony?
Part of it is, yes.
Okay, so I think if the written parts, if you could summarize, just so we can make sure that we get to the folks have flown in, too, before folks start leaving.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. So all of these reasons, even from Dr. Lisa Diamond, asserting that there is some fluidity of sexual orientation, immutability is certainly something that is questionable. I mean, that principle of someone being immutable, no change possibly happening, is still on the table as far as questions go. In my life, I've experienced tremendous change. Does that mean that every single person who wants to change their sexual feelings or orientation are going to succeed in doing that? I don't believe that that's even a promise on the table. I think what happens is eliminating an option reduces hope that creates a place of desperation and suicidality. In fact, last summer, in particular, our conference was held here in Portland, Oregon. We didn't realize it, but a young girl of 18 was attending the conference who had already said, if I can't find hope during this conference, I'm going to take my life. thank goodness that within a few hours, she said 3 minutes into it, she had decided that hope was still present and that she would live out the rest of her days. That was astonishing to me, and for that reason, those sorts of individuals, we exist. We're not going out hitting people over the head with our perspective or our goals. No, instead, what we hope to do is keep open the door for those who actually have the same goals, and if they don't, fine. I certainly have no desire to punish that. So it's a matter of, what about a subset of people who've been harmed in certain ways, and then they simply don't want to pursue that. They want to be able to have help and change. This bill would help shut that door for those of us like myself, like Jason and many others, including that 18-year-old girl who is attending our conference and many others. So thank you very much, Chairman Gelser, for the opportunity to share. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for letting me speak before you today. My name is Robin Goodspeed. I am here as a private individual. I'm also here as a board member of an organization called Voice of the Voiceless, which is a group of ex-homosexuals. And part of the reason that I'm here is I am an ex-homosexual, ex-lesbian. I lived my adult life as a lesbian, but I was not born gay. I was sexually abused at the age of 2 by a pedophile babysitter without the knowledge of my family. As a result of being sexually abused, I began a lifelong battle with anger, depression, addiction, and suicide, and began making choices that led to a life of homosexuality. Therapy was not a choice for my family, and I suffered a nervous breakdown at the age of 13. I lapsed into depression, addiction, and suicidal obsession, turned away from God, and became an atheist. I had my first lesbian sexual experience in college while drunk with my best female friend. In spite of depression, alcoholism, and suicidal thinking, I was deeply ashamed of my first lesbian encounter. I sought counseling help for suicide and addiction and was told I was born that way. I went to 7 therapists for depression, addiction, and suicide during a 20-year period in the 1980s and 90s, and every one of them told me a lie, that I was born that way, that I was born gay. Even the therapist who helped me face the sexual abuse that I endured as a child told me, that's who you are, while I was on suicide watch. I embraced that lie because as a homosexual, I was never held accountable for my choices or the damage that I did to myself and to others. I lived as an out lesbian for 35 years, and some of those years were here in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon. But long-term sobriety and lesbian relationships did not bring peace or remove my deep-seated shame. In 2007, I experienced the breakup of another lesbian relationship, the loss of a job, and the death of a parent. For the first time, suffering shame, guilt, and grief, I honestly examined my childhood and finally admitted that I was not born that way. I went back to church, and in 2009, God led me to witness the story of a man freed from alcoholism, addiction, and suicide through the power of Jesus Christ. I knew instantly that Jesus Christ could heal me of homosexuality, and he did. I was freed from all desire to continue in the homosexual life and called to tell the truth about homosexuality, my truth. There is no scientific data or proof that there is a homosexual gene or that anyone is born gay. Homosexuality is a behavior and a choice. That's what it was for me. I did not choose to be sexually abused as a child, but I did choose homosexuality. I made choices that led to that life, and I spent a lifetime fighting depression, addiction, suicide, and being victimized by born gay lies from the culture and the counseling community. I know other ex-gays who have had similar experiences, and this bill is designed to condemn children like I was to that life. Licensed professional therapists doing reparative therapy help sexual abuse victims like me heal from trauma, from predators, from sexual predators. And the panel that spoke before about the amount of child abuse that's happening right now in the state of Oregon, those statistics are alarming. It's happening. Licensed professional therapists doing reparative therapy help sexual abuse victims like me heal from trauma, from predators, and help families struggling with unwanted homosexual feelings. Would you deny that to your child or your grandchild? All families and children in the state of Oregon deserve the choice to heal. I did not get the benefit of reparative therapy. I wish that I had. But I think that the children and families of Oregon deserve the choice to heal. And I strongly encourage you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Madam Chair and the committee members, thank you for letting me speak to you. I'm greatly honored. I'm David Pickup. I'm a licensed psychotherapist in two states, California and Texas. I'm in opposition to Bill 2307. I'm also a member of the American Psychological Association and the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. I often wonder when I testify about these very serious issues if, with all due respect, if the committee members know what it feels like for a boy to be sexually abused by a pedophile. I do. That's what happened to me when I was very young. That and through other deep emotional wounds of severe gender identity inferiority and unmet emotional needs. That led me in puberty to sexualize a lot of these needs for the same gender. I was covered in shame and repression for many, many years. And then finally, just by luck or providence, I heard of reparative therapy. So, and then I went through years of reparative therapy, years of working on my own self, taking responsibility for myself, because I knew that I was born heterosexual. I knew that. I knew it didn't coincide, these feelings. They were very confusing. I knew it didn't really fit me, which is the story of everyone here, pretty much, who calls himself out of the lifestyle, whatever term you want to use, ex-gay, ex-homosexual, same kind of thing. Reparative therapy, authentic reparative therapy, helped save my life. I'm deeply saddened by the folks here who have testified what evidently is stunning harm and shame that they've gone through. If they have, then as a professional, as a person who's gone through these issues very successfully, and by the way, my experience with authentic reparative therapy was nothing short of a marvel. I am who I am, and I've never been happier today in my gender and sexuality. It worked for me. But I want to stress that nothing these good folks have told you, in my opinion, has anything whatsoever to do with authentic reparative therapy. At the risk of sounding too demonstrative, I need to tell you, I do not harm children. I have gay clients. I have ex-gay clients. I have two private practices, the majority of whom are boys and men who seek their heterosexual potential because they believe, for them, homosexuality has a cause and effect nature, not something that's naturally inborn. To rob a child or an adult of that opportunity is an egregious violation of their freedom, rights to free speech. A therapist's right to free speech, a parent's right to free speech. It violates a client confidentiality and puts the government inside the therapy room when there's not even an proof of harm. Or at least if there are some harms, there are also some marvelous stories. I would suggest you look on the website voicesofchange.org. It's actually voices-of-change.org. There's over 100 stories that the media is not reporting that were self-written by guys and some women who went through therapy, who this worked for. Real reparative therapy is this. I'll just take a moment to express what it actually is, which the media is not telling you.
And then I'm going to ask you to summarize.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I certainly will. Authentic reparative therapy, their first foundation is to remove any and all shame for having homosexual feelings. It lowers depression, lowers anxiety, boosts self-confidence, resolves gender dysphoria issues, helps a man or woman into their heterosexual potential. To rob, and children who have these stories, to rob them of that opportunity is unthinkable. Now, should clinicians who are isolated cases where they may have done harm, should they lose their licenses or be prosecuted? Absolutely. You bet. But you need to know, there's not been one ethical complaint of these therapies or therapists that do this in any state in the union to any licensing board within the last 35 to 40 years. You don't have to believe me. You can look it up. And the APA, my own APA, in the conclusions of its now famous task force report on SOCE, sexual orientation change efforts, it indicates in the conclusions, page 82 and 83, there is no proof of harm. So why create a law based on no proof? Can we please use the state's ability that they already have to prosecute these isolated cases and not rob poor, sensitive children of the resolution of their issues so that all children have a voice? We want everyone to be safe. We're not here to demean gay children. Absolutely not. I love my gay clients. We're here for all children. But I have, with all due respect, I have a feeling that a lot of people are here only for gay children. Let's protect all children and not pass this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you all so much for coming. Next up, we have Norman Birthmark, Peter Grover, and Cecil Prescott. And on deck, we will have Jason Thompson and Rebecca Roth. And we're at the point where I'm going to ask you if you can keep your comments to about 3 minutes. We've got about four more panels to go after this one.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee, my name is Norman Birthmark. I was born and raised in Portland, where I still live. I strongly support House Bill 2307, the Youth Mental Health Protection Act. In 1995, I shared my sexuality to a student group during my freshman year at Oregon State University. Like many LGBTQ teens, coming out was a very traumatic experience. I felt completely vulnerable, having revealed my deepest, darkest secret at a time when there were no out gay people in my classes. Eventually, the campus group at OSU referred me to the Portland Fellowship, an ex-gay Christian ministry. I went through a two-year program called Taking Back Ground, which included one-on-one and group counseling about how to overcome homosexuality through various techniques, including conversion therapy. I also regularly saw a licensed professional therapist who was on the Portland Fellowship's board. Although I was 19 years old and technically an adult, I never had counseling before, and never considered questioning or challenging the expertise of the people who counseled me. I trusted them and willingly consented to this talk therapy. However, the more I committed myself to the program and the work of this therapist, the more I eventually realized that counseling was far more harmful than helpful. In embarrassing and humiliating weekly sessions, I confessed my masturbation and fantasy life to a therapist and an accountability group. Instead of empowering or affirming me, I felt more guilt and shame about my attractions. I was counseled to question the supposed root causes of my natural attractions. Before this counseling, I was proud of the way I was raised. However, the counseling convinced me that my attractions were a sign that I came from a broken home. Before this counseling, I felt like a relatively normal guy. However, the counseling convinced me that my sexuality was a sign that I was actually lacked masculinity and needed to find a male role model. And before the counseling, I felt relatively confident. However, the counseling convinced me that my sexuality was a sign that I was socially and psychologically stunted. During 2 years in this therapy, I completely lost my self-confidence and eventually dropped out of school. It took me several years to rebuild my identity and self-confidence, far longer than the time I spent in the ex-gay program. And even now, 18 years later, I can still vividly recall the shame I experienced back then. Thankfully, I met others who left the program and found support of others who experienced these harmful practices. Today, I'm happily partnered and have been together with my partner for 9 years, who's here today. The reason I feel this bill is so important to pass is that I know personally that conversion therapy can cause great harm. No LGBTQ teen should be told by a professional licensed therapist to be ashamed of their natural, normal, healthy attractions. Being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender is not a disorder that needs treatment. The state should protect LGBTQ teens from this harmful, unproven, and unneeded supposed therapy. I urge this committee to vote in support of HB 2307. No one should have to go through what I went through. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Who's next?
I can go next.
All right, wonderful. And you heard the chimes. That's our little signal.
I heard that. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, thank you for having me here. My name is Peter Grover. I'm a licensed psychologist in the state of Oregon, and I'm a member of the Legislative Committee of the Oregon Psychological Association, and I'm here to represent the Oregon Psychological Association's support for your proposed legislation. Basic Rights Oregon approached the Oregon Psychological Association for support on this proposed legislation several months ago. The OPA Diversity Committee, the Legislative Committee, and Executive Board were broadly supportive of the bill. We requested feedback from our members, and the overwhelming response was also supportive. A concern was raised about setting a precedent for legislating what psychologists do in a therapeutic setting. We believe that this concern is important to note, but that it is outweighed by the need to protect consumers from this potentially risky practice that lacks empirical support. Decades of psychological research affirm that same-sex attraction is a normal variation of human sexual orientation. Homosexuality is not a mental disorder. The ethics code for psychologists is consistent with the charge of the Oregon Health Authority. We are required to provide effective, evidence-based treatments that are scientifically informed. In addition, we are required to not harm individuals with the treatments that we provide. The research on reparative therapies has failed to demonstrate that these methods are effective, but that they carry risk of harm. The Oregon Psychological Association, along with the nation's leading professional medical health and mental health organizations, does not support efforts to change young people's sexual orientation or gender identity and has concerns about the potential harm of these efforts. Passing this legislation is consistent with ethical principles for psychologists. This legislation makes a clear statement to Oregon consumers regarding the lack of scientific support and risk of harm associated with conversion therapy. By passing this legislation, you're helping to protect young people who may be unable to advocate for themselves. And I'll also add, I'm happy to provide, there's the American Psychological Association's report from 2009 on this that's a thorough review of the literature and provides and includes their recommendations, and I'm happy to make that available to any committee members or their staff.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, and trying to hold a black preacher to 3 minutes is a challenge. However, you have my written statement, so maybe that can help.
And he gave you an extra 45 seconds.
So. Excellent. So I wanted to focus on just a few
items.
Oh,
and you have to start with your name.
Oh, yeah. Oh. My name is the Reverend Cecil Prescott. I am Minister of Faith Formation and Children and Youth Ministries at Ainsworth United Church of Christ in Portland, Oregon. This afternoon we've heard very moving and powerful testimonies. I think what we can all agree on is that we want our families and children safe. No child should be harmed. No family should be tormented. All children should be safe and protected. I urge you to support HB 2307 because I believe it will do just that. To my friends who are worried about infringement on religious freedom and our First Amendment rights, I say absolutely not. This bill does not restrict our First Amendment rights, does not prohibit clergy from providing religious instruction or teaching. It prohibits discredited treatment by state-licensed mental health care professional. It does not prevent me or anyone else from publishing, discussing, or advocating any viewpoint or belief regarding sexual orientation or anything else. As a sidebar, I also want to affirm, and I'm speaking as coming from the Christian tradition, that Catholics, Protestant, and evangelical churches all affirm that sexual orientation is a given. It cannot be changed. Our approach to that given may differ, but if one is born in a certain way, that's who God created us all. And how we approach it may differ. However, I want to affirm that no young people should ever be shamed, as we heard this testimony today, by mental health professionals into thinking who they are is wrong. Mental health professionals should provide all children, straight, gay, lesbian, bi, and trans, support, and they should not be targeted. Our children should not be targeted for harm or hurt by these discredited and harmful practices. Now, as a person of faith, I believe we must surround our young people with support, affirmation, and positivity and encouragement. I believe in building communities of love that foster an environment in which young people and our children can flourish and contribute to their schools, their families, their communities. We have an opportunity, you have an opportunity, to do this for this state by passing a policy that says no to therapy aimed at changing or suppressing who you are. Thank you for your consideration and the extra 15 seconds.
Thank you very, very much. All right. Next up, we have Jason Thompson and Rebecca Roth. And on deck, we have Greg Moreland, David Sant, and Gina Frizzini. And on deck after that, we'll have Manju Bellagor. I can say your name, Manju. Bangalore, James Barta, and Brooke Collison. Welcome. And you guys heard what the chimes sound like, right?
Yeah.
Great. Would you like to start?
Yeah. My name is Rebecca Roth, South Salem. And I submitted papers, which are people who have been in the sex abuse industry. And their desire to get out of it. One of them is that I have with me that I did not submit is a testimony by a young man who was abused and. I guess I really should submit all of these, but he was abused and in the sex industry, and he found great relief when he found the loving kindness of Jesus Christ for himself, and the counseling that he's received to come out of being used in that way. Many children are abused and used as very young children, before they understand what's being done to them, or before they are able to process what's being done, many times they don't even remember until they are much older, and sometimes they never do remember. And it's very, very helpful for them to have counseling. I have a son who was abused in his youth and was very part of the courting process that goes on with abusers is that they try to make the child be feel mixed up and not sure what's happening, and that they try to make them feel like they are the one who's causing the whole thing, even though they may hate what's being done. In his case, he never got around to considering suicide. When we intervened, he was considering murdering the person who was doing this to him, that kids try to solve things in their own way. And I have a communication that I've made with somebody on the internet who was raised by lesbians. He was a male child, and because of being raised by lesbians, he had a lot of feminine motions and things that he did. And so homosexuals picked him out at a very young age. He actually went through with sex change operation and lost all of his parts before he met Jesus Christ and came into believing that it was possible for him to walk away from that kind of behavior. So his testimony online is that he regrets so much that he didn't meet Jesus Christ before he did that terrible thing to himself. And I also submitted testimony about, because the state of Oregon pays people to counsel our children.
Rebecca, I need you to summarize.
Toward this behavior. I submitted testimony about the sex conference that's been held, and at the sex conference, they actually teach the children to go out and find new children to bring into the behavior. And
so, Rebecca, can you summarize your 3
okay,
minutes?
Okay, the whole point is that there already is counseling being done while the children grow up, and they need to have the counseling of people who say you can walk away from this behavior. It gives them hope, and there's no reason to bar people from the expression of hope that's in Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Rebecca. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason Thompson, and I serve as the Executive Director at Portland Fellowship, which has been mentioned a few times this afternoon negatively. I in high school, I was in great torment and distress over my sexuality, was in conflict with my faith, and I wanted to end my life, and so I attempted several times to do so. And luckily, I didn't, and through sharing with other people, found the ministry of Portland Fellowship. And this ministry is aimed at helping men and women experience a genuine transformation in their masculinity and femininity. And one thing that I was so glad about when I first found out is it wasn't shame-based. There was no shame communicated. I wouldn't have stuck around. It wasn't about becoming straight. In fact, they said from the beginning, and to this day as a leader in there, we say that's not the goal. The goal is not to become straight, as though being straight is good and perfect. Like, there's a lot of messed up straight people, right? So the whole goal was simply to become the authentic person that God created them to become. And so that was my desire and my goal through that process, and it really did accomplish great things in my life. The goals and desires I had from those years were to be whole in my masculinity, be married to a woman. I'm now married to my wife Amy, and we have 2 boys, Trevor and Cody, 7 and 11, and they, like Jason Graves said, the joy of my life, something I would never have been able to achieve if the ministers of Portland Fellowship didn't walk me through a process of understanding my deepest needs and the resolution to them. Please don't limit the opportunity for other young people to experience what I've experienced. I realize there's different stories, I get it, but my story is just as valid. And the many other people who have walked through this process of healing in their life and have accomplished the very things they desired for their life. It's not quackery. It's not even really that sensational. It's really about just growing into the person that you were designed to be, the person you want to become. Please give that opportunity for other people to experience that growth and their change in their life as well. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Next up we have... We have Greg Moreland, David Sant, and Gina Frazzini. And then on deck, we have Brooke Collison, James Barta, and Manju Bangalore. Welcome.
Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is David Sant, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I'm here on behalf of the National Association of Social Workers Oregon Chapter in support of HB 2307. I'm also speaking to you today as a gay man who grew up in a conservative religious community and can speak to the dangers of this practice. To call this practice conversion therapy is a misnomer, as it is neither a therapeutic process, nor does it succeed in changing the individual's orientation from anything other than straight to straight. Same gender Attraction is not the result of sexual abuse, is not the result of trauma. To be clear, sexual orientation for all of us, indeed, is a biological, psychological, sociological, spiritual blessing that came to us by the nature of our birth and then unfolds as our lives unfolds. All mainstream, reputable, scientifically based organizations, including that which I represent, have issued policy statements telling of the dangers of this type of ideology. Indeed, the assumption that one can change his or her orientation or identity ultimately increases guilt, shame, and a profound sense of hopelessness, because no matter how hard you try, how much therapy you go to, how many tear-filled prayers at night, you will continue to be as you were the very next day. There are sound, evidence-based practices from a panacea of providers in Oregon to help youth who struggle with a myriad of needs, including that of sexual orientation. Too many youth have been lost to depression, substance use, and suicide because of the belief systems that conversion therapy represents, that we are sick, that we are less than. Actual or perceived LGBT youth are one of the few minority groups that experience discrimination both in the community and in the home. Mental health providers must be the safe spaces for youth to seek help, as we took an explicit oath to do no harm. The state of Oregon must continue to rectify its past in its pursuit of justice for all historically persecuted groups, including lesbian, gay, transgender, and bisexual minors, to join California, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. in passing this legislation. It is in this exercise in justice that NASW calls on you to support HB 2307. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Gelser and committee members, I'm Greg Moreland. I'm the vice chair of the LGBT caucus for the Democratic Party of Oregon. And so I come here representing the caucus, but also as a member, I'm also a member of the Human Rights Campaign Portland Steering Committee. With the work that I do in those organizations, I continually work towards making Oregon a better place for the next generation of LGBT people, to reduce the stigma and shame of being gay, especially for our youth. What we've heard is, you know, from several people here today, that telling a child who is questioning their sexual orientation or identity that they are broken and need to be fixed leads to a lifetime of recovery and harm. I say this because that's my story. From a very young age, growing up here in Oregon, I knew I was different. I knew I thought differently, saw things in a different way, felt things differently, heard things differently from everyone else. I also realized that I was more attracted to guys than girls, and in my child's mind, I put all these things together and thought that all my differences were due to being gay. And I so much wanted to be like everyone else. When I was in middle school, I began hearing about the programs and counselors who vowed that they can make someone like me straight. I researched these programs through Exodus and read books by licensed psychologists that offered promise to fix me. It wasn't until a few years after college that I finally connected with a conversion therapy group in Dallas, Texas, where my job had located me. I actively tried to make it work for me, but after countless sessions of heart-wrenching effort over a year, I decided that it was not going to happen. At that point, I felt like I was a failure. For the next several years, I just dove into my career, pretty much neglecting anything else in my life. Any attempts at relationships failed, and I could not fully live since I had so many things that were unresolved. I had done nothing to fix myself. It wasn't until 15 years later, when I turned 40 years old, that I started connecting with other ex-gay survivors and learning about their stories, that I finally started spending time thinking about my past and realizing that, you know, I can finally start living as I was starting to learn about myself, finally, at 40 years old. Since that time, I've been further finding out who I really am, and finally, as recently as last year, discovered that many of those differences I was trying to fix all those years ago when I was a child is basically due to living with Asperger's syndrome on the autism spectrum. Those things aren't things that need to be fixed. When California passed the ban on conversion therapy for minors in 2012, the LGBT caucus of the Democratic Party of Oregon passed a resolution to do the same in Oregon. The full Democratic Party of Oregon's State Center Committee followed with a vote in support of the resolution. We have been working with our coalition partners ever since. This is not just important to me, but also important to our youth. I ask for your vote in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, my name is Gina Frazzini, and I serve as co-director of Basic Rights Oregon. I'm honored to be here tonight to ask for your strong support on House Bill 2307, the Youth Mental Health Protection Act. I'm here on behalf of our constituents all across the state. We work to ensure that all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Oregonians truly experience equality, and we believe this legislation is a clear and tangible step to ensuring our state's one that prioritizes the safety and affirmation of our youth. Particularly our LGBTQ youth. So I want to thank you for being so generous with your time. You have my written testimony, and rather than present that, I want to offer further context and address some of the issues that have been raised in the hearing today. One question regarding regulation within the professional associations versus handling it through legislation was addressed really eloquently by my colleague or by the representative from the Oregon Psychological Association. But I do want to call your attention to a letter that's been submitted on behalf of Maxwell Hirsch of Lake Oswego. Maxwell actually tried to go through the complaint process with the Oregon Psychiatric Association around an investigation from conversion therapy that he was subjected to and found that it resulted only in a note in the file of the psychiatrist that was treating him. And he says, quote, "I still find it worrying that I was pressured by a psychiatrist to identify as heterosexual nearly 25 years after homosexuality was entirely removed from the DSM. So the ban that's represented by House Bill 2307 would provide clear guidance to therapists, to parents, and clients that these kinds of conversion practices are not allowed in Oregon. I also want to address the claims that have surfaced around a lack of evidence. In fact, the evidence is robust around the degree to which conversion therapy has been thoroughly discredited and debunked. We'll be sharing with you a report from Columbia University, which took 45 peer-reviewed studies published over 30 years, demonstrating that no evidence of effectiveness and substantial evidence of harm was demonstrated by these studies. It does include 13 primary research studies. A few examples just to note in the record: Beckstead and Morrow, 2004, Borowicz, 2008, Fjellstrom, 2013. Again, 45 peer-reviewed studies that we'll share with you following the hearing today. I do want to note that conclusive research on harm would actually be unethical. It would involve subjecting one group of LGBT children to conversion therapy and another to affirming therapy and seeing how many survived. It's something the APA has been clear about not being ethical, and so we work with what survivors are telling us, which is alarmingly clear and consistent. I also want to note that there is absolutely no link between sexual orientation and sexual abuse or pedophilia. Zero. And that the arguments that have been made in the room today about the First Amendment, about parents' rights and patients' rights have all been directly shot down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. One person who testified today was actually the lead plaintiff in the SB 1172 case in the Ninth Circuit, making the same arguments before you today that were shut down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. If I may, just in conclusion, Chair. I think Pastor Prescott, Reverend Prescott, was very eloquent in confirming the fact that the legislation does not affect religious freedom. I have not reviewed the Dash 7 amendments that were referred to, but will do so. That said, our position is that a professional licensed by the state of Oregon to provide counseling should not be allowed to provide to practice conversion therapy, and that remains our position. Moving forward,
There's been a serious disconnect in some of the testimony you've heard today in opposition to the bill, a really serious disconnect between the fact that every leading medical and mental health professional association in this country has seriously considered the impacts of conversion therapy and have confirmed that they reject the view that being LGBT is a mental illness and have deemed conversion therapy as ineffective and harmful. So out of respect for your time, I'll close by saying we need your support to do everything possible as a state to prevent the loss of even one more child. Current Oregon law does not protect young people from being coerced and subjected to these harmful practices. It doesn't protect their families. It places youth at serious risk for depression, decreased self-esteem, substance abuse, and suicide. And as a state, we have a moral responsibility to protect youth and their families from practices that lead to such devastating emotional consequences. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. And our last panel is Brooke Collison, James Barda, and Manju Bangalore. And that, if I've done that, I believe I will have hit everybody that has been... Everybody that has been signed up? Have I missed anybody? Great. And you know the three-minute timer. We're about to lose folks to carpools.
Sorry.
So don't worry, you've said anything wrong if people leave.
Senator Gelser and the rest of the committee, I'm Brooke Collison. I want to commend you for your perseverance. It makes one hesitate to even think about being a legislator. I'm a professor emeritus of counselor education at Oregon State University. I'm also a fellow of and past president of the American Counseling Association. Being retired doesn't mean that I'm disconnected from my profession. I continue to serve. Recently was a representative of the American Counseling Association at a conference which has been alluded to here, Time to Thrive, a superb conference. That was held in Portland. I am a heterosexual male, and I use the pronouns he and him most of the time. I am very supportive of 2307. My written testimony is in your electronic file, so I'll not read it. I would like to call attention to a second piece of testimony in your written file from Richard Yep, who is the executive director of the American Counseling Association and who asked me to testify for the association on his behalf. From that, you can read the rest of the comments, but I would add that this week I will be 81. And that's given me an opportunity to see a change in our profession, in our practice, in our culture over a long period of time. When I began my undergraduate education, the word homosexuality was not included in any curriculum. When I began my graduate preparation at the University of Kansas for a master's degree, homosexuality was not in any of the curriculum. Today, that would not be true. For any of the persons who have testified here today who have expressed the pain of interactions with a therapist, but I won't use that word, of a conversion practitioner, I apologize if they came through any of my graduate preparation classes or programs, because that would not be the case today. In the 60s, there were studies about reparative therapy. Basically, as a group of graduate students, we tried to figure out what is that. Having been raised in a homophobic community, and I was kind of naive, but plunged into that study with the rest of my colleagues. And fortunately, those psychological studies and the ones that followed came to the position that the American Psychological, American Psychiatric, and American Counseling Association, the National Association of Social Work, and others have come to, which basically is reparative therapy shouldn't be done. Your legislation restricts that to those who are minors, and I understand the reason for doing that.
Mr. Collison, did you hear the chimes?
Okay, I'm free. Thank you, Senator Gelser.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Senator Gelser, members of the committee, I appreciate all your time on this issue. It is important. And my name is James Barta, Legislative Director for Children First. We are working to make Oregon a great place to be a kid, and this is an issue that's critically important to kids in Oregon. And you know, as others have spoken, I have our organization has written testimony. Our executive director and her husband, who you may know, Tanya Hunt and Dave Hunt, have written testimony of their experiences and concerns and their hope for this bill to be passed as well. But I know that personal stories are probably the most powerful thing, but we are a data-driven organization, Children First, and a lot of the research has been discussed. I appreciate the previous Columbia study that's been referenced, but opponents have referenced another study, Staten-Jones, and so I was sitting in the back and I looked it up. And that study is paid for by an organization that does this conversion treatment. And it is a longitudinal study. It had less than 100 people. The 30% figure that they referenced were people who simply no longer engaged in in sex at all. And so when you have a study that's paid for by one side, it definitely calls it into question. And I think that we all can realize that the preponderance of evidence, the preponderance of experts, all recognize that this is something dangerous for our children, and that this is something that is well within the guidelines of wanting the best things for our children to stop in a clinical setting. You know, we're talking about schools, churches, homes, wherever a clinical therapist is doing its work. So I just want to say that this bill, as described, doesn't affect a lot of the experiences some of the opponents brought up. And they said they were accepted. Conversion therapy is not, what it isn't. You know, what we want is acceptance, support, and understanding. And if the therapy is that, that's all our goals. So I urge your support for this legislation.
Thank you, James.
Chair Gelser and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the time to speak. My name is Manju Bangalore. I'm a University of Oregon student, and I'm in support of House Bill 2307. What conversion therapy is to me is people with privilege deciding for the members of the LGBT plus community who they are and who they can love. It's dominant culture invalidating a person if they aren't heterosexual and cisgender. It's dominant culture snatching away the innate right every single one of us has to our own individual identity. People who testified in the House against this bill cited a study that was done by the Masters and Johnson team. Their study claimed that the participants were all gay and that many were able to lead straight lives after the therapy. However, follow-up research done by Dr. Douglas Haldeman shows that only 1 in 5 participants identified as gay. So any conclusions that were reached through the study aren't scientifically valid because the study's basis is a lie. And that's not just me saying it, that's the medical community saying it. The medical community has declared that none of the research mentioned has any factual basis, and yet the researchers are still cited as scientifically valid by the opposition. Medicine has evolved since studies like these, and it's time the law follows. I created a petition to end conversion therapy that garnered close to 450 signatures after hearing about Lila Alcorn. It saddens me that another life had to be lost for the world to pay attention. But the petition shows that our state is one with an active, engaged community. Oregon prides itself on being progressive, and it's time we prove it. It is our duty to ensure that Lila's life does not go in vain. She was different, not because or in spite of her identity, but because she fought for herself tirelessly. Members of the LGBT plus community are different. In fact, many pride themselves on that fact. I'm not here to convince anyone that we are all the same. I'm here to say that you don't have to be the same to be equal, and you certainly do not have to be the same to be treated with the respect and dignity every single one of us deserve. When the opposition says that passing this bill will invade the right to privacy of a family, many of the times it's coming from a place based on the internalized effects of a hostile family and an even more intolerant society. Someone at some point told them something was bad and they listened and never questioned it. Yes, everyone, every single one of us is entitled to our own opinion, but none of us are entitled to thinking that because someone has a certain identity, they deserve to be persecuted and mistreated. None of us are entitled to being oppressive, and every single one of us is accountable for being more ethically responsible than the environment we grow up in. Even if conversion therapy did work, even if it wasn't harmful, even if it wasn't ineffective, why would it exist? Why does it still exist? Why does it still continue to endanger the children of this nation? To tell them that who they are and who they love isn't okay according to some arbitrary set of rules? Because that doesn't sound like a good reason to me. Let us not repeat history and allow this indirect murder to continue. Passing this bill will be a step in destroying the institutionalized prejudice unfortunately continuing on today. It is your job as our leaders to do what is best for the state and to keep safe its children. Please stand on the right side of history and support your children and support your state and its children by voting yes on House Bill 2307. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And that was our last panel. Senator Mona Sanderson, you are a survivor. Thank you for
survivor.
Thank you for sticking with me.
Well, I wish we had more time for dialogue. I mean, this is such an important issue. Love and relationships are key to our humanness, our soul, who we are. And I think all of us want to have our children be protected and be safe and be proud of who they are and respect the decisions that they make. So it's I hear the opponents, I hear the proponents, but the safety and preservation of our children are so important, and that's going to be the reason for my vote. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to thank everyone for coming today, for staying for the whole hearing. We had a lot of folks that shared deeply personal stories today. And to every single one of you that did so, I want to say thank you. And I appreciate the way everybody listened. I imagine for most people in the room, there were parts of today that were hard to hear and were challenging. And I just really appreciate the way that everybody in the room handled that and conducted this difficult conversation. So, thank you all very much. Thank you for those that brought the bill, and especially thanks to those that shared your true own stories. And we will have a work session on this bill on Thursday. So thank you all very much. And with that, I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 2307 and adjourning the Human Services Committee.